Well, good morning, friends. Welcome into First Take on this very casual Friday. Nothing too crazy happened yesterday. Christine Williamson filling in for Molly. We got Courtney Cronin, Brian Windhorst, Freddie Coleman. And guys, I mean, it's a casual Friday. We have
holiday weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
We're all
July 1st. Exactly. There's so many things to do. Nothing too crazy happening at all in the world. Just kidding. We're obviously starting in the association. In news that left folks a little shook yesterday, KD has requested a trade from the Brooklyn Nets. His business manager, Rich Kleiman, told Woj yesterday. So Nets GM Sean Marks is working with KD on finding a trade. Phoenix and Miami are two places that Durant wants to go, sources told Woj, but the Nets plan to make a deal that allows them the greatest return of assets. Talk about a swing. Look at the Nets' 2023 title odds before and after KD requested a trade. At 35-1, Brooklyn right now is nearly five times less likely to win it all next season per Caesars, and the Warriors and Suns are championship favorites at 6-1. Freddie, I'm going to start with you here.
Oh boy, look out now.
Do you blame KD for wanting out of Brooklyn?
Blame is a very slippery word, and I'll use that because I thought the best description about this whole thing, Bruce Beck is a friend of mine. He works with WNBC4 in New York, one of the dean of sportscasters in New York City, and he said, this is a colossal failure. And I thought that was the perfect description for what has gone on. 3 years to the day when Kevin Durant left the Golden State Warriors, 3 years to the day later, he decides that he wants out, that he is done. So I'm not going to put all the blame on him for wanting out of Brooklyn, but I will say this. Kevin Durant, this is what you get for aligning your force with Kyrie Irving. And people can say, oh, Freddie, you're a Kyrie Irving hater. Mm-mm, I don't hate on Kyrie Irving. But what's the old line, KYP, know your personnel? You got to know who you're getting involved with, your Kevin Durant. You decided to leave the Guardians of the Galaxy, known as the Golden State Warriors, a place that you left to go from Oklahoma City to go to Golden State because you wanted to play basketball the right way. And you did that and had a great run with Golden State. And then all of a sudden, you wanted to align yourself with a very mercurial person, not guard, but mercurial person in Kyrie Irving, who's always going to be about Kyrie Irving. What did you think was going to happen when you two guys got together? So we want to put blame on anybody. You can say blaming KD for wanting out of Brooklyn, but he should have known this going in, that the minute that you put yourself next to somebody as talented, but as really kind of off kilter when it comes to Kyrie Irving, you can't expect the best things are going to happen. And Bruce Beck was exactly right. That's why this was a colossal failure, because he should have known better leaving Golden State than joining with Kyrie Irving.
I can't blame him for leaving something toxic. He understood where this thing was headed. He saw the writing on the wall. And a lot of people are going to think, oh, it was a snap decision because less than 72 hours after Kyrie Irving opted into his $36.5 million player option, KD says, I'm going to leave. No, the writing was on the wall for a long time. He saw that this was headed down a road that, you know, he lost control of. I don't like that he's leaving knowing that we didn't get to see this thing through to where we thought it was going to go, where this team could win a championship together, where they had a big three that never got to play together in the NBA. That's sad to me because there was all this talent wasted. But as you had mentioned, Freddie, in putting the blame with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant knowing what he got in Kyrie Irving because he knew this person coming into this, I blame the Brooklyn Nets for ceding the power to their superstars. Think about all the things that happened dating back to 2019 when, because of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving's relationship with DeAndre Jordan, this franchise gives DeAndre Jordan that $40 million extension. They fire Kenny Atkinson because he wanted to start Jared Allen over DeAndre Jordan, and that would have caused friction with the relationship between the star players and the organization and their head coach. And then on top of that, there's the vaccine thing with Kyrie Irving and not being able to play in home games because he wouldn't get it. And the Nets were like, well, we don't want a part-time player. Then eventually they allowed him to be a part-time player. So I see a lot of the blame here going on to the Brooklyn Nets from my perspective, because they allowed this thing to happen. Like, this should be a very cautionary tale to other sports franchises about not letting your players, no matter how good they are, assume all of that power and start making the decisions and calling the shots.
I was around the Warriors a lot in 2019. I totally understand why Kevin Durant decided he needed to leave. Not to mention the fact that he had torn his Achilles. Mm-hmm. I've been there when teams reach the end of their line. I've seen LeBron leave the the Heat. I was there for that. I was there when he left the Cavs. I understood that decision. The big decisions that Kevin made after that, I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. I never understood them. I never understood when Kawhi was out there, when LeBron was out there, when the Lakers, Clippers, Knicks were out there, that he not only chose Brooklyn, which actually had a great, you know, they had earned the right to get a free agent, but he chose to pair up with Kyrie. I didn't understand at the time. And I listened over the following years as they explained themselves mm-hmm. about how they both sort of felt the same way, but I never understood it. Because when I saw the Kawhi and LeBron options in LA, I don't know why he picked it. Right. I don't know why he signed that extension last year. I was with him when he signed it. We were in Tokyo. They won a huge game. He played a brilliant, brilliant game to win in the semifinals against Australia. I know maybe not everybody paid attention to it, but it was an incredible performance. It saved the U.S. They were down big. He carried them. And after the game, they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, you signed a $200 million extension. What was that about? I don't understand why he did it. I don't understand when he did that contract that not only did he go for 4 years, he didn't even give himself a player option. He looked at the lay of the land with the Nets and said, thumbs up. Let's stick with it.
Right.
I don't understand that. On the court, I think he's just brilliant. God. I think he's brilliant. I can't tell you how my admiration grew for him watching him in Tokyo last year, mm-hmm. coming off of the Achilles, playing for Team USA when he didn't have to.
Absolutely.
And carrying them to that gold medal. Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, we saw Steve Nash last year hug Kevin when he helped them win that one game against Milwaukee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Greg Popovich, the man with all those rings and everything, he was hugging Kevin Durant because he got him his gold medal.
Right.
On the court, I can't speak enough about how wonderful Kevin is. I've never understood his off-court decisions since he left there. And that is what set us up for today. Because he is the choices that he made on where to go left him in this situation. So I don't blame him for wanting to get out. Because mm-hmm. he looked at the lay of the land and said, this actually sure. might be the first good decision in terms of non-basketball, in terms of off-court decision. This may be the first one he's made.
That's fair.
Since he left 3 years ago in Golden State.
And that's completely fair. And here's the deal with that. I've always wondered what Kevin Durant is searching for. When it comes to basketball, whatever that is. And you don't have to be the alpha male and be the best player on the team. Those things don't have to be the same. For example, the old San Francisco 49ers teams. Joe Montana was the best player on the team, but he was not the alpha male. When the New York Giants won their Super Bowl, Eli Manning was not the alpha male the first time they went. It was Michael Strahan and everybody else. You don't have to be the alpha male on the basketball team to be the best player. But I've always wondered, Brian, what is he searching for? Because he had in Oklahoma City. Had it, the franchise was his. Everybody in that city, everybody in that state loved him. Wasn't good enough for him. Saw the tea leaves. Don't want to play this way. Up
3-1. That's why he and Kyrie got together because right. they both won championships and neither were happy.
Right. Well, see, if you're Kevin Durant, you're a grown enough man where you have the quality of making the best decisions. You can't allow yourself to be swayed by circumstances when it comes to somebody else. If you want to get out of a toxic situation, I'm completely with that. Nobody should want to stay in any kind of toxic relationship. And to your point, Brian, if he saw this way the Brooklyn Nets were going to continue to go, also James Harden looks like the smartest guy now because James Harden said, I'm not putting up with this. I'm out of here from that standpoint.
You saw the writing on the
absolutely.
Ball.
Absolutely.
And
even an injured James Harden said, I'm not injured in my mind enough to stay or be a right. part of this because I know how this is going to end. I'm just going to move out to Philadelphia. So whatever timing mechanism went off in the mind of Kevin Durant, I get it. I understand it.
Harden didn't extend.
Right.
Yeah. Durant's like, I extend.
Right.
James was like, uh-uh.
And that's why it's maddening. Why would you make these knee-jerk reactions and then say, oh, man, why did I do that? That's what's maddening to me about a guy that's not dumb when it comes to Kevin Durant. But a lot of times, to your point, Brian, sitting shaking your head, go, dude, what are you doing?
Here's my question, because we talked about this on Monday, right? There were reports that KD was frustrated with how the Nets were handling Kyrie's situation, right? So do we feel like KD is more frustrated with the franchise? Obviously, it's because of Kyrie doing all the things that he did. But is he more frustrated with the franchise or with Kyrie?
Kevin, and rightfully so, I think, has gotten upset over the years when people have tried to ascribe and assume what he's thinking. So I'm not going to do that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I am going to say that I don't know how he could have been happy with Kyrie. I don't know how it could have been. So if there was a last straw, maybe we'll find that out. Maybe we won't. But the Nets decided, they made a decision that they would rather risk alienating both guys than yielding to Kyrie Irving. That was a decision that was made at the highest levels of the organization. Mm-hmm. They followed through with that. and this was the consequence.
The thing that frustrates me about this whole situation, because remember, Kevin Durant said he wasn't going to get involved between the organization and Kyrie Irving and trying to say one thing of like, oh, maybe you should give him this, you should give him that. No, he said he was going to sit out of that, and that was earlier this week. Yet it kind of feels like now Kyrie Irving didn't get what he wanted, and Kevin Durant siding with the player and saying, all right, to hell with the organization here. Right. I'm going to move out on my own, too. Like, that's the frustrating part, because it does feel like you're kind of backtracking on what you said you weren't going to do, which was to side either way, to get in the middle of it. And just from the optics of this whole thing, it feels like he is siding with Kyrie Irving because Kyrie didn't get the max deal that he wanted, the big extension, and there's no stability in that for Kevin Durant in being able to see this thing out long term. Like, there's a lot of blame to be passed around here, and we're going to be debating this for a while about all the places where this went wrong. Kyrie Irving, in the end of this, deserves the majority of the blame because of the decisions that he made. Remember, you hated my word coaxed on Monday.
Oh, no, I didn't hate it at all. I just thought it was really
like
good.
Eight times after you said
it. It was fantastic. I didn't hate that word at all.
Kyrie Irving helped Kevin Durant make up his mind to come to Brooklyn. He didn't say.
I think helped isn't even a strong enough verb.
Like, yeah, coaxed.
Coaxed. No, okay, I'll go ahead and use my word I used on Monday. But so Kyrie Irving deserves the majority of the blame here. Kevin Durant cannot be absolved of the responsibility, though, for this thing becoming a failure of epic proportions. Like, we talk about the 2013 Los Angeles Lakers, the 2004 Los Angeles Lakers, these dream teams that were supposed to win an NBA Finals and fell flat. This, to me, rises to the top of the list of, like, seismic failures in the NBA.
They did have injuries. I mean, Kyrie had injuries dealt with.
But they never
dealt with injuries.
Right.
Yeah. They all had injuries. So the reason that they didn't achieve as a team was partially due to injury. But that was... That was not the frustration of the Nets organization. The Nets organization, and by the way, I know some fans are like, because we talked about how the Nets couldn't have another repeat of last year. But they say, well, there's no vaccine mandate. It wouldn't be a repeat. But it wasn't just about the vaccine. The vaccine was just the highest profile situation.
Sure. Right.
It was, and it wasn't just about the injuries. It was about the intrinsic way they went about their business. They completely turned off the organization, and they said, we're not going to do this anymore. And I think Harden looked at it and said, no way. Durant ultimately yesterday, and there was a lot of skepticism in the league over whether Kevin would actually hit this button.
Okay.
Which is why I think it's interesting that yesterday Kendrick Perkins, who's known him very well for years, he described it as courageous that he hit this button. Trust me, during this week, teams were having meetings. If Kevin Durant becomes available, what are we going to trade for him? They were preparing for it.
Okay.
But they weren't like calling the Nets and offering because they were like, I don't know if he's going to do it.
Yeah.
I don't even think the Nets knew if he was going to do it. The Nets had a whole bunch of contracts. I don't know if you saw yesterday. The Nets signed a whole bunch of players.
Claxton.
The Nets made a trade yesterday.
Addie Mills,
Those deals were going out as if they were preparing for Kevin not to do it.
Right.
And so Kevin doing it, I think it was like a real breaking point that we've never really seen him hit before. Mm-hmm. And so now I think it's sort of unpredictable what's going to happen going forward.
If the Brooklyn Nets had stood their ground, when they told Kyrie Irving, you're not going to be a part-time player with this organization.
Mm-hmm.
By the time Christmas rolled around, they caved. We talk about giving power to players in an organization. They immediately told Kyrie Irving, you are the emperor in Brooklyn. Because if they had stayed steadfast, Sean Marks, Joe Tsai, the owner, everybody, if you're not going to get the vaccine, okay, but you can't play here. The minute that they realized that they thought they needed him, never mind the fact that when he finally came back, they were having the best record in the Eastern Conference. They were playing extremely well as a basketball team. Kevin Durant gets injured. James Harden gets traded. But that set off everything in motion. That the minute that they backed down to Kyrie Irving, if you're Kevin Durant, you think, oh, wait a minute. I'm glad that you want Kyrie Irving to have that kind of power, but I don't know if I want to follow that guy. And you shouldn't be following that guy either. If they had stood their ground, Brian, Courtney, and Christine, we're not having this conversation, in my opinion, because Kevin Durant would have seen the organization say they stick to their guns. They're going, hey, Kyrie Irving, what are you going to do about it? Then you put everything in his court. The minute that they gave in to him and allowed him to continue to do those things, that led us to 3 years after the day he left the Golden State Warriors for the Brooklyn Nets.
Every step of the way, they move the goalpost. So I feel like the Nets can't really blame anybody other than themselves for ceding their authority to their stars.
So KD no longer wants to be a Net. His wish list. Suns, Heat on that wish list. Freddie, I'll start with you. Where do you think the best landing spot for Kevin Durant is?
Well, I think anywhere not near Kyrie right now. I think we can all agree on that. That's the best landing spot for Kevin Durant. I firmly believe that the best landing spot for him is the Miami Heat, because you got a dog warrior there in Jimmy Butler who is going to be that guy that Kevin Durant can look at and say, yep, he's got a handle on that. He is not going to be afraid to tell me what time it is and how the clock is going to be built. And plus, they played so well together on the Olympic team. Their games match each other so well because they're so much of a versatile player. And now Jimmy Butler won't have to do as much because he literally carried the Miami Heat to the NBA Finals a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. He literally carried the Miami Heat to having a 3-2 series lead against the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. At a certain point, you're Jimmy Butler. You know you can do it, but it's nice to have help.
Yeah.
And now you have the ultimate help. I can't believe you're using help and Kevin Durant ultimate in the same sentence. But in modern basketball, more than ever before, you got to have, we say this all the time on Freddie Fitzsimmons, 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN Radio, Monday through Friday. We say this all the time, me and Ian. You got to have two greats and a good. You have a chance to have two greats like this, and there's plenty of good that you can put around them. Plus, you get an Eric Spoelstra and a Pat Riley in that Heat culture. We saw how Kevin Durant worked in a structure of culture with the Golden State Warriors before he decided that he didn't want to be a part of that anymore. If he's at the point of his career, Brian, Courtney, and Christine, that he wants that structure, I don't think you can find a more perfect organization for that than it comes to the Miami Heat.
Courtney?
I think the Heat, too. And for a lot of the reasons that Freddie mentioned, like all of their half-court offense issues go away if you get Kevin Durant. So that's great for a team that was already the number one seed in the East last year. And I know people are trying to rack their brain around, well, how can this happen? Nothing should be off the table. And I know that there's that rule right now that Bam Adebayo cannot be acquired by the Nets unless Ben Simmons leaves the roster first because of the rule that prevents teams from having more than one player on that designated rookie max contract. So a lot of facilitating that needs to happen. But I think that if you can pull off a trade like this, if you're the Miami Heat, you pair Kevin Durant with another superstar that he already has familiarity with. He's already played a lot of Team USA basketball with. It can go one of two ways. I know that a lot of people look at this and look at Kevin Durant and Jimmy Butler thinking, okay, the forces can actually work for good, or these two can come and buck heads like you've never seen before and be very explosive, because Jimmy is an alpha. Mm-hmm. Kevin doesn't need to be the vocal, you know, rah-rah leader of that team, because that's already it. Jimmy Butler's role. And I think if Kevin Durant knows that going in and knowing that he wants to stay in the Eastern Conference and that it's the right fit for him, Miami makes a ton of sense. And I know that Phoenix is the other team there that was on that list. There's so many great scenarios that we could talk through about him going outside of those two teams, which I feel like I think you said this yesterday, that the rest of the NBA is on pause right now. Even though free agency started at 6 p.m. on Thursday, until Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets and some other team make a decision, everybody else is playing the waiting game trying to figure out, can we get in on the KD sweepstakes?
I want you to think about this.
Okay.
Chris Paul.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Devin Booker.
Uh-huh.
Kevin Durant. Monty Williams. James Jones. This is the amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Tremendous role players that they could offer in trade, and this is what's most important. They control all of their draft assets, which means they can trade up to 4 first-round picks, up to 3 pick swaps. Okay, now we got a problem, though.
Okay.
I don't think the Nets are in love with that package. I don't. And by the
Why
way,
not?
Let me just say that I know what Nets fans are saying, or NBA fans are saying. Well, they say, like, well, no, if you're trading Kevin Durant, you got to get Devin Booker. You're not getting Devin Booker for two reasons. First off, it's structural. Devin Booker just signed a $200 million extension. Right. He cannot be traded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Secondly, this is the whole problem with star trades over the history of the NBA. You're not going to trade for a superstar in Kevin Durant if you're trading like your best player.
Right.
Because then you're not giving it.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, we could argue whether who's better, but now you're spinning your wheels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why they say in star trades, 4 quarters doesn't make a dollar. You want the dollar. You don't want the 4 quarters.
Got
they don't
it.
Equal in the NBA.
Okay.
Okay. So. But the Nets, I don't think, from what I'm told, I don't think they love that offer. I think they're looking for more bona fide players. So what I think you're going to see, and I think this could happen with the Heat as well, is that Phoenix is going to go out and search for a third team.
You're going to have to.
Or Brooklyn is going to go out and search for a third team. And the key is going to be that draft compensation. Holy Moses. Potentially 4 first round. Because, and I'm sure Phoenix is like, why is Brian saying this? We're not offering that. I mean, that's not going to be your initial offer. Your initial offer is going to be, we'll give you one first-round pick protected.
Uh-huh.
But everybody knows that they can trade up to four and the three. But whatever they would potentially agree on,
yeah.
you're trading an entire team's draft, potentially. That can potentially go out, and you might find a team that's looking to trade a star.
Well, what would, if it was Miami, would you say no to Tyler Hero, Kyle Lowry, the rookie Nikola Jovic, three first and three swaps? Would that get it done? I can't wrap my head around anything bigger than that.
The Heat don't control their full draft situation. They would have to make a separate deal with Oklahoma City to get recontrol of their draft picks. Now, they could make that deal, but Oklahoma City is now very aware. Remember when Oklahoma City found out that they had to do a Paul George trade to allow the Clippers to get Kawhi Leonard? Mm-hmm. How did they handle that trade? You think the Thunder are going to go, oh, sure, whatever, just throw us a second-round pick. Oh, what'd you have for 4th of July barbecue? No, I mean the Heat, yes, the Heat can make a competitive package. And also, I can make the same thing, say Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley. I mean, it's not hugely different. But I think Phoenix is where he wants to be. And typically, not always, it didn't happen with Kawhi Leonard, for example. Typically, the star player gets where he wants to go. So how is that going to happen? So you start to wonder, where is the team, where is the package that it makes the most, where is the third team? I'm going to tell you something happened yesterday.
Ooh.
The league executives wondering what the heck it means. And it happened within 5 minutes. In fact, Adrian, the tweet right before, Adrian tweeted about Durant. He tweeted something else. It was a trade yesterday between the Utah Jazz and the Brooklyn Nets. It's a very strange trade. It's a very strange trade. And you'd really have to be a Jazz or a Nets fan to even know what I'm talking about right now.
Okay.
I don't even know if you guys know what I'm talking about.
I'm on the edge of my seat. Yeah. I have Woj's notifications turned on.
They
up,
traded
but I don't
Royce O'Neal, who is a role-playing three-point defensive shooter, to Brooklyn for a future first-round draft pick. And so you're going, well, what do you care about Royce O'Neal? Why does that matter? Why would the Jazz do that? Why would the Jazz, who have two stars on their roster, take a player who's one of their starters and best defensive players and trade him in a salary-dumping move? Why would they do that?
To open up space to try to land Kevin?
No.
Part of a three-team trade?
And you say, why did Quinn Snyder walk away from that job?
Okay.
And you say, when Danny Ainge, last time he hired a coach, which was Brad Stevens.
Right.
What happened that same year? What did he do? When he hired this young coach who'd never coached the NBA before, and he gave him a long contract, gave Brad Stevens a 6-year contract. Will Hardy, who they just hired, who was, you know, going to potentially be a great young coach, they gave him a 5-year contract. Very rare for a first-time head coach to get a 5-year contract. Why? What's going on in Utah?
What's going on?
And that's what people in the league are watching right now.
Okay.
What's going on in Utah?
Okay.
And so I think the Brooklyn Nets and Phoenix Suns need to find out what's going on in Utah as well. Because what else happened that first year that Brad Stevens got hired? Danny Ainge traded Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce
to the Brooklyn Nets.
So that trade, that Royce Young trade yesterday, was a very strange trade. Very strange trade.
Do you think they're just blowing things up? Is everything about
the Christine, I don't know what they're doing.
Okay.
But the executives in the league are looking. They're looking. And so what I do think is going to happen, because Phoenix and because Brooklyn probably don't have a perfect trade package, a perfect trade partner.
Right.
It's going to spread. This trade's going to spread. And it could go 3 or 4 or 5 different ways. And this is, you know, as I'm talking late in the night to league executives last night, they got their whiteboards out and they're figuring out, well, this could go here and this could go here and this could go here. So I just think, you know, we could see this spread out to multiple teams.
Okay.
So
I still wonder how much of this I still wonder how much of this has to do with Kevin Durant wanting to go to Phoenix because of what happened to Golden State.
Yeah.
And wanting to beat them and show that, hey.
True. Yeah.
Because why would you want to go out to the West? Uh-huh. Not saying the East is any easier, although the East is better, but there's a method to his madness. If I go out to Phoenix and I play those guys 4 or 5 times a year, they got to go through me or I got to go through them. I wonder how much of him leaving Golden State, not working in Brooklyn, is playing a factor in choosing Phoenix over Miami.
He may be very happy in Miami. I don't want to make it sound like there's a massive difference there. But sure. I do, from what I've been told, Phoenix is his preference. And I wasn't told that yesterday. I mean, that was circulating earlier this week.
Okay.
I want to ask you something, because I think you said something about this yesterday, Wendy. Obviously, people wanted to know if Katie and Kyrie were going to be able to play together somewhere else. What is the likelihood that happens?
I think this, for I know what you're getting. I know what you're pulling me towards. Okay? In the event that Katie and Kyrie would have stayed together, which this was discussed within minutes after the trade demand,
right.
There was only one place where it really makes sense, and that was the Lakers.
Uh-huh.
Because nobody is going to look at this situation and say, well, let's replicate this. Let's import
right.
this. Okay? But the Lakers are desperate. The Lakers don't have, well, we have this star or this star or this star or this star. And they had a package that could make it work. So in the event, and, you know, the feasibility of the two of them staying together and playing for another team makes sense for the Los Angeles Lakers. The likelihood of that, so feasibility, let's think about the XY parabola or whatever.
Well done.
The feasibility way up here, the likelihood way down here. And so you know what happens with the Laker fans especially, you know, they hear that and like their eyes get real big and they get real excited. So it's, I mean, you can make it work in the trade machine, but it's not something that I think we're probably already talked too much about it. I just think it was important for me to point out that the feasibility existed.
Okay.
Okay, I want to talk about Kyrie though, because one of the things that was on his wish list was the Lakers. If Kyrie goes to LA, does that make LA a title contender?
I mean, he's a top five player in the NBA. And I know that we can put all of this other stuff aside. And it's kind of hard to do that when you are talking about Kyrie Irving and all that comes with him, because you don't know what he's going to do on a day-to-day basis. But does he make the Lakers title contenders? There's too many other question marks for me with this roster in order to go all in on that. And if I'm thinking, if Kyrie Irving gets to LA, I think we said this earlier this week, what happens to Russ? Isn't he being traded somewhere else? Like, when we're talking about the feasibility of those two playing together somewhere, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, and you think about the Lakers, aren't you also thinking that Anthony Davis is out and Russell Westbrook's out and both of those guys are going to the Brooklyn Nets because you're swapping because of the salaries? Like, I don't think the roster, let the turmoil of like what would happen on the court and in the locker room aside, I don't know if that roster is good enough because there's no depth beyond that.
We're already spending too much time trying to talk myself into this.
The
reason is because if the Brooklyn Nets want a star, that's how you would get a star in Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. Forget about Russell Westbrook. That's not relevant. That would just be ballast in a trade. But again, we're talking about it too much.
Okay. He doesn't. I don't think Kyrie, at this point of his career, makes anybody a title team based on previous events. I know he's a gifted playmaker, and I don't know if he's a top five player. I got seven players right now. Giannis, Steph, KD, LeBron, Jokic, Embiid. I take over Kyrie Irving. That are less of a pain in the you-know-what than that guy from that standpoint. So I don't think he makes anybody a title team because everything that comes with him. Kyrie Irving is a very special talent. The problem is that he believes his special talents to override everything else, or you're supposed to placate him. Well, how did that work in Boston? Mm-hmm. How did that work in Cleveland? How did that work in Brooklyn, where it became a colossal failure? So if you bring in Kyrie Irving and you have to clearly understand that you have to do these things, that leads to not being a title team.
Well, this is the problem, Freddie. First off, he makes $36 million. It's hard to trade for a player who makes $36 million. Secondly, the Nets don't know what they're trading Kevin Durant for. They may not want to do a trade with Kyrie Irving that's going to take on money, right? Because you may take on a bunch of money when you do a Kevin Durant trade. You don't know what your books are going to look like.
Okay.
And then Kyrie wanted to be in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm. Allegedly.
Look at the way he treated the dudes across the river there. What happens if he gets traded to a place he doesn't want to be this year? So, like, his value in a trade is just very low. Difficulty to trade for him, very high. Again, you know, we're looking at the crossover there. It's a very narrow thing. And when you run that simulation over and over, you keep getting Lakers, 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 Lakers. And so, but also, the Nets have no interest in accommodating Kyrie Irving. They have no interest in doing it. So if there comes up maybe a three-team trade or a four-team trade to get the Nets satisfied what they want, to get them maybe a star, to take draft picks that they might get from Phoenix and reroute them someplace else, or take this guy, four-team trade, Kyrie might get thrown into that four-team trade just as salary ballast.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, he's going to be used as a tool to help the Nets. He is not going to be used as a player to trade for value. Very unlikely they're going to get anything value, maybe a draft pick or two. And he's not going to be used to accommodate. And he's going to have to sit and wait for the Durant situation to play out, whether that takes 3 days or 3 weeks. Mm. And that's just the reality of it. But at the end of it, when all that smoke clears, it is true. He could be a Laker. That is definitely still on the table.
I would like to say that Lakers title odds have moved dramatically since the news. So they were 22-1 last week, 18-1 right before the news. And now they're 10-1. And I know, Wendy, I listened to your podcast, and I know you said something about how sports books, they kind of like, they know something's going on over there. They know something because they always
have.
They always
Yeah.
So more so the pay bettors. Attention to that.
Yeah.
People are putting money in, and the books are reacting.
Yep. The but sharps are coming in. Mm-hmm.
Somebody knew that Paolo Banchero.
Yeah.
Because the books reacted before it became known.
Right.
And earlier this week, when I was hearing, boy, KD, if he asks for a trade, wants to go to Phoenix, I was looking at the odds, and Phoenix's odds were going down. And I was like,
Something's happening.
Somebody's going on there.
Right.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take pod. Have a fabulous day.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The college football season is just around the corner and things are being shaken up before kickoff as USC and UCLA are planning to leave the Pac-12 and join the Big Ten as early as 2024. That was confirmed yesterday, a reminder that Oklahoma and Texas will be headed to the SEC in 2025. So some huge shifts happening in college sports, and it could just be the beginning. The Big Ten just got bigger. Here's what the conference will look like in 2024. The addition of the Trojans and the Bruins make it 16 teams in total. So the Big Ten is set to become the only FBS conference with schools in both the Eastern and Pacific time zones. So let's chat about this with the mouth of the South, Paul Feinbaum, joining us now. And Paul, I'm going to start with you here because this is all, it's just chaos. Is it surprising? Is this move surprising at all?
Yes. And anyone tells you that it's not is would not pass a lie detector test. What's so fascinating is about last August, after the SEC made its move with Oklahoma and Texas, the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Pac-12 formed what they called an alliance. They said, we won't do what happened in the Big 12 and the SEC. We're not robber barons. We're gentlemen. We looked each other in the eye, and guess what? Kevin Warren he's a Big Ten commissioner. He put a knife in the backs of the commissioners of the other two leagues. Now, he didn't really do it. What happened was UCLA and especially USC said, you know what? We have no shot playing in the Pac-12. It's a failed conference. Everything about it is wrong, and we're going to look around. And they found the most convenient conference that's located in Chicago, only about 2,500 miles away. And here we are. And for all of the, and I just want you guys to think the next time Freddie and the rest of you are sitting around listening to a college administrator talk about the most important thing is the student athlete, and he or she, we want to make sure they get the class on time. If you're an athlete in Southern California, you get to get on a plane, whether it's basketball or football or softball or track, and fly all the way to Piscataway, New Jersey. Freddie, you know where that is. I couldn't find it or spell it, but that's what we're talking about here.
Sounds awful.
Oh, my goodness.
to Paul's point, like, we all should be surprised about this. I mean, anybody who saw this coming, I don't know if you can really, like, I don't know if anybody really falls in that category, but realistically, there's been a ton of conference realignment going on over the last couple of years that it felt like, well, we may not have been able to project that UCLA and USC were going to do what they did on the heels of 4th of July, that college football was headed towards this two-conference, super-conference sort of dynamic in where this kind of feels like it's the English Premier League, where you've got that group and then all of like the lesser leagues within it. So I'm not surprised that this sort of manifest destiny is going on in college football right now. The fact is, this has been trending this way for a while. And if you're USC, you're not afraid to make these sort of cutthroat moves and do what you need to do in order to have the most success. They did it in poaching Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma. Right. They haven't been to the college football playoff since 2016. They look at themselves in the Pac-12 right now and realize, you know, kind of in a league that do we know, does this league care about the college football playoff and being competitive? Like, their best chance now is to get into a place where the TV deals are seismic in their own right. Mm-hmm. And what we're hearing are these TV deals for UCLA and USC could be north of $100 million. Think about what that means when you add that into the giant pot that is the Big Ten Conference and their media deals. And I am not surprised about this one element. Remember the Big Ten media rights deals that was supposed to happen in May, and there was kind of this weird sort of silence around it about, like, well, what's going on here?
Now we know why.
I think we know why
that
now.
Makes sense, yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
One of the things Paul and I have known each other for years, and the one thing he's always told me, he said, Freddie, all you got to do is follow the money, and it always tells the truth. When Oklahoma and Texas could be frenemies and join the league, no one should be surprised that the West Coast frenemies, USC and UCLA, decide to join forces. And, Paul, that's one thing I want to stress in terms of what next now? Because it all fouls the Notre Dame from this standpoint. Oklahoma, Texas going to the SEC.
Yeah.
USC, UCLA going to the Big Ten. What now for Notre Dame, who still wants to be Notre Dame U and have their own conference? And I wonder how much that can be feasible when it comes to football.
Well, let's start with a couple of things about Notre Dame. They're so important they have their own network, NBC, which runs out in 2025. They have this utterly bizarre relationship with the ACC. They play in every sport but hockey and football. Now, football is only the biggest sport, and if they withdraw from the ACC, they'll pay a penalty, but they can get out. Now, if you studied seventh grade geography, you say to yourself, why isn't Notre Dame in the Big Ten? Notre Dame is practically a suburb of Chicago, where the Big Ten headquarters, but there's a lot of bad blood. It goes way back, even before I was born, Freddie. And so they don't really like the Big Ten. So what happens now? Either the ACC figures out some way to get them in, of which I don't know how they do at this point, since Notre Dame has resisted everything. They played in the ACC during COVID and went to the playoffs.
Yep.
Or they bite the bullet and join the Big Ten. Or guess what? That Notre Dame says, we like the SEC. That's where the action is. We'll come down there. It sounds implausible, but in college football right now, nothing is implausible.
I get the sense we're going to have just like two big super conferences.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That seems to be where this is going, where you got to fief them over here, you got to fief them over there. It's going to lead to an 18 playoff, maybe a 16-team playoff. And I know there are plenty of old heads, Paul, that are looking at this day as a day that will live in infamy, that we don't have these rivalries in these conferences and everybody is separating. We better get used to that from the standpoint of this is where the future of college football is going to go, because there's way too much money out there for people to go back in time to say our sheepskin is better than your sheepskin and go back to the rivalries that happened that made college football so special.
And Freddie, think about this for a second. Biggest rivalry in college basketball history, Duke and North Carolina. Mm-hmm. It's possible that if Notre Dame doesn't end up in the SEC, and it's certainly they're not a favorite to, mm-hmm. Clemson says, you know what? We're tired of holding the ACC on our back. We're heading to the SEC, and we need a partner. And their partner may be the University of North Carolina. Can you imagine North Carolina telling Duke, see you later, guys. Wow. Now that Coach K is gone, we're heading to the SEC. But it makes sense. They're a very attractive product. And then you have Miami and Florida State going, What about me? Mm-hmm. And they all can't join because the SEC is struggling right now to figure out how to get Oklahoma and Texas in. They can probably take two more, maybe two more after that. But these 26, 30 team leagues, we saw how that worked in the ACC, how it hasn't worked in the ACC, going from Miami to Boston College and Syracuse. So you have to be smart, but it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen very quickly, especially with the Pac-12 teams, a couple of like Oregon and Washington going, we're out of here too. And then you have those other three conferences, the ACC, the Big 12, and the Pac-12 looking for literally table scraps.
Man.
And doesn't it kind of feel like we were headed this way because there were conferences and colleges individually that were trying to figure out a way to combat the SEC's hold on college football? Did we really think that these schools were going to be able to work together under the guise of not poaching each other's member institutions? Like, I just wonder, like, will George Kliavkov ever answer a phone call from Kevin Warren again after this whole thing, this gentleman's agreement, went out the window on Thursday with the addition of UCLA and USC to the Big Ten? Like, I got to wonder about Notre Dame, though, Paul, and I wanted to ask you about this because their athletics budget, as we know, the last couple of years has become like super strained. Is there any other way for them to fix that than by joining the Big Ten?
Well, I mean, Notre Dame could pull a surprise and actually back up their creed and code and say, we care more about academics than anything else. Yeah. I don't believe they will. I've been to games at Notre Dame, and I see everyone up there talking out of both sides of their mouth. I mean, Brian Kelly was the most successful coach in Notre Dame history. He just left. Because he couldn't beat the big time teams. He couldn't beat Clemson. He couldn't beat Alabama. So he went to the SEC. So I think that's a roadmap. And relationships matter, too. And the athletic director at Notre Dame, Jack Swarbrick, and Greg Sankey are close friends. They worked together. They were part of a four-person team that tried to give us a 12-team college football playoff a year ago, but that didn't go over because the ACC and the Big Ten and the Pac-12 didn't think they needed it. They probably think they need it now. So that's the most intriguing part of this. But ultimately at Notre Dame, the president of Notre Dame makes the final decision, and that is the ultimate wild card in all of this.
There is also a very important point, because since Notre Dame's other sports are in the ACC, Notre Dame would have to as a football team, join the ACC or take their entire sports league or sports teams out of the ACC, pay a fine. So, like, you're talking about how strained they were financially.
That would make it
even worse.
But the only way to remedy that would be to join either the SEC or the Big Ten.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's true.
Or have the best Venmo account ever when it comes to Notre Dame.
You didn't know we had all this money. It's in my Venmo account. Paul, I do want to ask you, because obviously this is a big move, and it was a big move last season when Oklahoma and Texas decided that they were going to the SEC. Which one do you think is bigger?
I'm probably going to be ejected out of my SEC network seat here, but I think this is bigger, quite frankly.
Sure.
Because that move really was not answered. I mean, we got some movement in the Big 12, which, quite frankly, very few people care about. True. This is the city of Los Angeles picking up and moving. That's a critical television market. I mean, I don't need to tell anybody here at ESPN how important L.A. is. It seems like every time I see Stephen A. Smith, he's on a plane to L.A. So I think that makes us a little bigger, and it also just it means that you can't stop here. It could have stopped last year. I mean, I don't think it was going to, but nobody could figure out the next move. But Southern Cal is Southern Cal. Listen, Texas is great, Oklahoma is great, but are either one of them Southern Cal?
Think about how many media markets the Big Ten has now.
Oh, my God, everything.
Oh, that's true.
Like, and think about where they could expand. Because, Paul, that's one thing where my head went yesterday. If they've got, like, maybe, like, the top six, top seven, is Seattle next? Are they going to go get Washington?
Sure.
You know, you've got to think about everywhere that their footprint is nationally. I know we've joked about the map in being, like, an East Coast, West Coast thing. But they've got Chicago. They've got New York. Mm-hmm. They've got all L.A. They've got all of these massive markets. Who's to say that, you know, the market dominance and the TV dominance isn't what's driving it? And just start thinking about the next ones that could come after that. Like, to me, Seattle's the next one and the no-brainer.
Exactly. Well, what this is really about, and this is awkward talking about it on ESPN, but this is really a battle between ESPN and Fox.
And Fox.
Fox right now has a stronghold in the Big Ten, and ESPN has a much bigger stronghold. I mean, they're connected to the Big Ten. Don't misunderstand me. So that's where it goes, and you have two heavyweights now, and they're both going to be very successful, but no one else is. And so, you know, we've seen this in a million other entities, whether it's Coke and Pepsi or the beer companies or computer companies, and I think that's where we are. And Notre Dame is not going to tip the balance, but where Notre Dame goes is very important. One thing about television markets, though, I think the difference between East Coast, West Coast is when you go to Los Angeles, people are genuinely Southern Cal fans there. Right. You guys are in New York right now. Mm-hmm. Walk out the street, okay? Walk from Seaport down to Wall Street and see if you find a college football fan that even knows that Rutgers is in the Big Ten.
Yes.
So that's really why this is so much more important.
Yeah, there are people that go to Rutgers that don't know Rutgers is in the Big Ten.
Well, the college football season is right around the corner. We're very excited about it. I love the drama, especially during the offseason. Thanks so much. Paul